How I deal with failure determines how I achieve success. Thought for today, Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. How I deal with failure determines how I deal with success. Well, I have been a failure recently in keeping the gate to our property closed. You got to keep the cows in, you got to keep the critters in, the children in, the adults in, and all that sort of stuff. And it's a gate that just has a little chain lying on a hook next to it that keeps it together. You know, no big locks or padlocks or triple locks and stuff, and no big sliding doors like the other gates have, but just a lovely inviting gate that says keep out. You know, but I have been leaving it open. Now, how do I close the gate? How do I remember to close the gate? Well, we live in a thought world. We live in a thought world. In this thought world, everything is by thought. And sometimes we forget that. Sometimes I forget that. And so instead of saying, when I close the gate because it was inadvertently left open, I say, the gate is always properly closed. Not that nobody can come in. Everyone's welcome, you know. But the thing is, it's private property, and they're coming into our living room. Our 104 acres is our living room. It's our playground. It's our meditation area. We walk these meditation paths, and it's a nice place to be, and we want to keep it nice. And people have a tendency to want to ride their horses through our property because it's lovely trails there. They want to ride their motorbikes through there, and their off-road bikes, you know, and little carts on there, because we've got lovely little paths to go on. And we tell them, please don't, because our little feet are trotting those paths, and we want to keep them nice and clean and perfect. We rake them, we gently touch them, we do all these things. But you see, what we don't do, or what I don't do, because it's only me, I do not say the gate is always kept
closed.
The gate is always kept closed. It doesn't matter. You can drive through it and then close it, and that's fine. But always keep it closed, because we have a herd of Holstein Jersey cows here that would walk right out the gate if it were left open. Now, our Holstein and Jersey cows are imaginary, but they're a nice thing to have in your consciousness. You listen to James Herriot, the serial that was on TV for a long time, and as James would come into any barnyard and any farmyard, he would first open the gate, drive through, get out of the car, close the gate, get back in the car, rain, snow, sleet, hail. Why? Because there were cows in the field, because there were bulls there, because there were sheep there, because there were goats there, whatever they were raising. And the gate was meant to keep those critters in, because they forget sometimes where their home is. And they would get lost out in the wilderness and become something in somebody's frying pan. But you have to have in your attitude, you always close the gate. We have a rule here at the monastery, and let's rephrase it. I have a rule here at the monastery, and that rule is, if you open it, you close it. It makes no difference. If somebody's coming in the 5 minutes after you, you close it. That is a good habit. If someone comes in a few minutes later, they can open it and they can close it. The gate is not that difficult to open and close. In fact, we have a solar gate on one of our outlets on the property here. And when I go to it each morning, I go up to it and I press the button and I let it open, and I see that the rollers are rolling perfectly and that the dirt hasn't gotten into the grinding area there. If it has, I just sweep it out. We should keep a broom there, I guess, for that. But I sweep it out with a stick. And if necessary, I wash it out with the hose that I have there. And then by that time, the minute is over and the gate slides automatically to a close, and I go on my walk. But it's quite nice. Now, I don't have to visualize that gate always being closed, because we have it set. I want to put a little electric eye on the gate so that when you come to the top of the hill, I'm leaving the property, the gate will automatically open. Wouldn't that be nice?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not difficult to do. So We'll do something like that. And this is such a simple thing, but if you open it, you close it. Now, if you open it, you close it, doesn't mean that if someone is 2 feet behind you, you close it right in their face. And if someone is, if the queen is coming, you stand there and hold it open. You say, come on in, love, you know. And she'll say, well, thank you so much. But if there's somebody that's a long way behind you, if they're maybe 10 feet or 20 feet behind you, you close it. You close it because you opened it. Now, there's no reason, there's no benefit in opening it and closing it. There's nothing like that. We're not opening it so we can walk through. We're not closing it so we can keep the animals in. We are opening and closing it because it is part of the rule. It is part of the program, of the monastery program. Now, all of you who hear me, you think that how I deal with failure determines how I achieve success. Well, think of this here. I was telling Ellen this story this morning. We look at the Bible as a wonderful book, and it is indeed. It's a story of the religious development of a people, the Jewish people. And it's a very well done book. The Bible of the other organizations, the
Islam,
the Confucius, the Buddha, the Brahmins, the Buddhists, whatever the organization is, they all have their Bibles. They all have their books that teach them the story of their tradition and their life. Well, in the Bible that we use and share with the Jews, it's a lot of good stuff in there. But the Old Testament is particularly interesting. Because, you see, we should be learning to be masters. Now, to be masters, you start out by learning to be in charge of your physical world that you're living in. Because if you can't be in charge of your physical world, you will not be happy being the master where there are no rules. In absolute consciousness, there is no rules. There is no right or wrong. See, but in the relative, there is. So, there is a set of rules that we are all born into. Some are born into German rules and French rules and Italian rules and American rules and stuff like that. And each country has rules that are slightly different but very much the same. Basically, it is for the welfare and betterment of humanity. However, we are not taught to follow these rules to the nth degree. We're taught it's okay for us to do things, but not for others. It's okay for us to go around the world, like we're doing right now, telling the world how to behave, but it's not okay for others to go around doing it. Hitler wanted to go around the world and have it behave according to his standards, and he wanted to make the world Reich, you know, that everything belonged to the German fatherland, you know. And many other people have done that. Alexander the Great. Alexander went around trying to take over everybody's country. Now, the people whose country he took over, they didn't like it. They were perfectly happy living their lives in a wonderful way, in whatever manner they chose to for themselves. And he comes around and he says, I'm bigger and stronger than you are, and it doesn't matter what my way of thinking is, I'm taking over your country. Well, how do you do? You know, and so this goes on all the time. And now, back to our Bible story. Moses was born in Egypt, right? And the rule was all the Hebrew babies had to be killed that were born in a certain period of time. And that's a rule. I mean, that's the rule of Egypt. And they were living in Egypt, and they had to obey that rule. But they didn't. They snuck them out. And so, as the story would naturally have it, he ends up in the Pharaoh's lap. And the Pharaoh doesn't recognize that he's a little Hebrew kid, you know. And I find that very interesting that the Pharaoh wouldn't recognize a Jewish child, you know, because they do have certain very wonderful things about them that are unique and special. And Germans have wonderful things, and Italians, you can say, oh, you're Italian, or you're Mediterranean, or you're French, you know. And they know that. It's our physiology. And it's hard to disguise it, but he disguised it because his wife told him that that was her kid, you know. So next thing you know, he's in charge of the army. He's in charge of a whole bunch of stuff. He's the prince. He's the pharaoh's son. And so the pharaoh is putting up this wonderful pyramid and so forth. And so he gets upset with the way that the management is handling the people, who are the Jewish people, who are his heritage, because he feels an affinity for them. And so he tells this one guy who's being mean to them, he says, stop it. You know, and then the movie tells us that he saved this woman and so forth from being run over by one of the big stones. And perhaps it was, perhaps it wasn't. But the point is, he was a company man. And this went on all the time. He grew up with the pyramid being built. He grew up with things handling like that. He grew up with the Hebrews being mistreated, not mistreated, but they were treated like slaves. And they were slaves because they had come into Egypt because they were an overridden country. And they took them as slaves, which was a standard practice in those days for the various countries to do it. The practice continued on up through many, many years, up through the Roman Empire, up through the other empires. And look at the United States. We had slaves by the tons, you know, and yet we are going to say that, you know, that's wrong. Who is without sin, let him cast the first stone. Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow, so Moses blew it, and he killed this guy for mistreating, as he felt, the employees, the slaves, and so then he had to run. So now, it's the second time he's running away from the rule, running away from the law. He should have let himself be killed or whatever had to be done, because that's the rule. That's the rule of the society that he was espousing. And he was certainly espousing that society because he was the Pharaoh's son, to the Pharaoh's understanding. Okay, so then he runs away. And he goes off to the desert, and he gets married. And he has a bunch of kids. And the first thing he does, he dumps his wife and the kids to go back to Egypt and get the people out of Egypt land. And he goes back there, and he says, Pharaoh, I want these slaves released. And the Pharaoh says, who the heck do you think you are? I mean, these are my slaves. I got them fair and square in whatever I did, and that's the standard procedure. Now, why don't you take the Ethiopian slaves? Or why don't you take the Nigerian slaves? Or why don't you take this, that, or the other? You know, you just want your slaves. I mean, that's not very nice. What makes you think your slaves are any better than anybody else's? Well, you see, he felt he had the wisdom of God within him speaking, and he did. And he listened to the divine within him telling him to free those people. But he didn't even know them. He didn't even know them. He didn't know what they believed. He didn't know what they practiced, what their worship was. And so, but he went there and got them. And he had more magic than the magic that was shown by the Pharaoh's magicians. And Moses likes to say that God on high came down, and we know that God is within us. So it was the divine within him, it was the genius within him, it was the magic within him that allowed him to do all those wonderful things that he did. And that's great. I mean, that's honorable, you know. Except he had no right to go there and try to take those people out of there, because those people were taken fair and square by the rules of humanity, and they were mistreated according to the rules of humanity. Slaves at all times are mistreated. None of them are treated like persons or human beings, and that's unfortunate. Some few here and there are, but to be a slave is to be a slave, and that's what the word means. So then he speaks his word, and the Red Sea opens. Now, he's a magical man. He's a fantastic man. He believed in himself. He believed what he was doing was right. And he did it. And he did many wonderful things. But that doesn't mean that he was right. That he was right in taking the people from the Pharaoh. Because they were the Pharaoh's people. They were not his to steal. I mean, why, as I say again, why didn't he take the Ethiopians? Why didn't he take the Nigerians? Why didn't he take the Europeans that he had there, you know? I'm sure he had lots of slaves there from other dimensions of the Pharaoh's travels. Okay, so then he takes these people to the desert. And he says to himself, now if I take these people into the promised land, there right away, because it wouldn't take that long. If I take them there right away, they're going to be without training as a proper Jew. And so Moses trained them in what he thought was proper Jew, and he'd been away from it himself. He didn't really know. He had to just listen within, which was perhaps the best way. But he didn't know. He hadn't read the Hebrew books. He hadn't done any of those things. He was living in the desert. Okay, so he trained the people as he thought should be trained. And he gave them all of the commandments. He gave them all of the rules. He gave them all of the things. And then he went up in the mountain to pray for a while, and when he came down, they were not doing it. They thought they'd lost him, which was reasonable. And so they went back to their primitive worship, worshiping idols, worshiping the golden calf, worshiping, and hey, that's cool. That's who they were. Now, even the generations coming along to that time, they still worshiped those things because that's what they learned. That's what they remembered. That's what they were. Now, he was teaching them the one God, which was a very noble thing to do. And it was an outside God, but it was the one God. And then, when he brought them to the Promised Land, he did not want to go any further. He wanted to retire. Huh, Moses wanted to retire. What the heck is this all about? You know, the Bible never said anything like that. Of course it didn't. They didn't have that term in those days. But he wanted to retire. He'd had enough of this. You know, he was up in his late years. And he had had just about enough of running the show. And so he wanted to retire to the mountains up there, which he did. He went into a cave and disappeared. But he held up his arm. He said, as long as I hold my arm, you can go into the Promised Land, and you can go in and take all these people and kick them out of their country, kick them out of their houses, kick them out of their towns, kick them out of their world, kill them, and you take over. Well, what a wonderful way to start in the land of milk and honey. By taking other people's property, by taking other people's home. Joshua fought the battle of Jericho. Jericho. Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. Now, that could very well have been. And who were the Jerichoans? Who were the people who lived there? Were they bad people? Were they people who were disliked by God? Were they people who were just toys there, just ants to be blown away? They were human beings. But Moses told his people, I don't care. Nothing stands forth except what I ask you to do. And so the people went in and took over that nation, took over that world, and took over that country, and took over, and they're still taking over it. And they're saying that it's their land. And it never was their land. It never was the land of the Jews. It never was the land of the Hebrews. I don't know where their land was, but it was never there. Might look into that sometime, see what the historical thing is of this, you know, where they originally did come from. So, we cannot go on violating the rules of society and expect to have a harmonious world. When we go around attempting to be our brother's keeper, what we are doing is violating the rules. We should love our brother. We should bless our brother and help him indeed, but not tell him what to do. Because the advice we give is the advice we should be taking. And when we are telling our brother to be loving and gentle and kind and honorable, to have integrity, to be at peace with himself, that's what we should be doing for ourselves. And when we are loving, kind, having integrity and at peace with ourselves, we don't do those things. We do not need to tell other people how to live their life when we are living our life harmoniously and beautifully. It works so simple. It works so beautifully. Now, we say here, how I deal with failure determines how I achieve success. All of our life, all of us have been a magnificent failure in following the rules. Now let's become a wonderful success. We didn't follow the rules beautifully. Now let's follow the rules beautifully and watch the success that comes to us. When you follow the rules no longer are abhorrent to you. They're no longer unhappy to you. When you follow the rules, you feel comfortable. But when you feel you have to follow the rules, you have to do whatever people say, then it's no fun. It takes all the joy out of it. But when you do it because you choose to, this is why people come to the monastery here. The first thing we do is give them our set of rules. Simple, 10 or 12 statements that we have, and that's what it is. And then, of course, if you're going to be on campus for a period of time, that's fine, you can be a guest. If you're going to be on campus for longer, then you must be a student. And if you're going to be on campus longer, then you must become a novitiate or a monk. And if you don't want to do that, then the campus isn't the place for you, because the campus is only for people who are 100% dedicated to their spiritual path. Now, when we violate our law, our rule, our program, by letting people be on campus who are not doing that, beyond whatever our schedules are, it's terrible. Now, I say to you, in all honesty and in all love and in all reality, if the rules are not compatible with who we are now, change them. Change them. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't make these rules. You have made these rules yourself, and you have required these rules yourself. But if they're not realistic for what you are in the 21st century, then change them. What about the 22nd century and the 23rd century?
Change them again.
Do you think that these same rules are going to be valid? They might. They might, but if they are valid at all, they should be followed. And if you learn to follow these rules, then as you go through your life living as a master human being, you will find that being a spiritual master, the easiest thing in the world, because you will not be possessed by anything, you know, or you'll not be touched by anything, there'll be no judgment. It'd be one-pointed. You'll be unconditionally loving. Wow. You find that bad?
No.
You find that tough? You find that not a very good reward? I find it a wonderful reward. But the thing is, it means that you have to give up your slaves. It means you have to give up your attitude that you're superior to somebody else. You have to give up your thinking that everybody in the world bows and kowtows to you. You bow and kowtow to yourself only. And the rest of the world is a reflection of you. Not because you make it that way, but because you are that way. Now, how I deal with failure determines how I achieve success. When you're given advice or suggestions by people who are supposed to give you advice and suggestions, and you find them not acceptable, then you're in the wrong place. But if you can handle them, if you can deal with them without being shook up, without feeling that the world is on top of you, then you are in your right place. How you deal with failure, and that's failure, not following the rules and learning to follow them, how you deal with it shows you exactly how you're going to achieve success. And I see all of you, naturally, right now, successful. And I see all of our students, all of our ministers, all of our friends, all of our practitioners, all of our churches, all of the people in our world, all on the practitioner healing list. I see all successful, happy, fulfilled, wonderful, dynamic, powerful, right now. It's not something to come, but it's right now. When you can see it, then you say to yourself, I am peace. Good, it's all over. I love you.
Love you.
Love you.